Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Buick Audra, whose new album, Adult Child, is out June 13th. Her fourth solo release, the album features songs that find the Nashville-based songwriter dealing with issues of identity and estrangement and agency in writing one's own future. We recently discussed those themes and much more ahead of the album's release. That's Buick Audra on Into Music, coming up now. So this is like an exciting time, right? Like getting ready to put out a record, do a tour.
Yeah, I know. I just announced my tour dates like a half an hour ago, which is why I'm kind of all over the place. Yeah, it's exciting. That's one word for it. I try to be excited more than I am all the other things that I feel.
Yeah.
Which is panicked and like unsure, but that's, I'm used to feeling those ways.
I would have to think too, it's a little bit strange because, right, there's the creative side, which is that probably relatively small spark at the beginning, and then there's all the work that comes like with putting a record out, probably to the point where you might even forget a little bit about the inspiration at some point.
Yeah, for real. I wrote a song last week and I was like, that's right, I'm a songwriter, you know, because this particular chapter is all about not as much of that. You know, the creative stuff is cyclical for me. I'm not a songwriter who writes. I don't have one of those practices where I get up at 5 a.m. and put in 2 hours at my craft. You know, I write when I write, and I used to feel like I was supposed to be wired differently. Like I was supposed to be like Twyla Tharp and have a daily practice, but I don't. And I've learned that I write in like kind of bursts around projects, which is why most of my records in both of my bands are concept albums, because I write in one sort of flurry and I'm usually trying to untie some knot or other in my mind. And so the record becomes about that.
Of course, I want to talk about the themes on the album, but you touched on something. So I was listening to the record and then knowing, you know, your other work, you can kind of write in pretty much any style.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I take that as a compliment.
Yeah. Was that just kind of like, is that down to just like being kind of like a musical omnivore, or, you know, do you just sometimes say, you know, this needs this kind of feel to it. Let's see if I can do that.
I very rarely feel like I even make that call in my writing. I just, I am a musical omnivore. I'm a huge music. I'm a student of, you know, music and songcraft lifelong. And I, of course, listen to a bunch of work. It only recently has been made clear to me that some people don't listen to all kinds of work, like other musicians. Like there are metal musicians who only consume metal, and that is wild to me. But, you know, I have always loved a lot of different kinds of music, you know, rock and R&B, I would say primarily. Like I'm a huge R&B fan. I would say that's like the core of where I live musically, even though you don't always hear it in my output. But yeah, when I write, I just sort of, the songs kind of filter themselves to one project or the other. I just kind of know by the way that I'm singing them when they first come around. And also like sometimes the subject matter, even though my work is personal in both of my projects, there's a different type of vulnerability in the Buick Audra work than is present in the Friendship Commander's work, I think, to me.
So this record, I mean, you definitely have something to say here. And the way that I see this is this idea of, if we don't get what we need in childhood, we're left trying to put the pieces together in adulthood and wondering who we are. And sometimes I think we get glimpses of it, maybe, but it's always a mystery in a way.
Yeah, that's exact. I'm so glad that that comes through. Because I think in general, part of like my purpose in my work and all of my projects is to write about. I don't really talk about this in adult child explicitly, but I think a lot of what I'm trying to communicate is that when you are raised in abuse or imbalance or any number of things, like the rest of a life is impacted by that, and not always negatively. You know, it's not just about like, oh, I'm, you know, just limping down the road from here on out. It's not about that at all. I actually think that a lot of my strengths were developed very young, you know, as a result of the things that I was raised in and around, and I'm proud of those things. Some of my gifts, maybe some of my music, but certainly these other pieces of like how to relate to other human beings, how to think about myself. I mean, the self-loathing that has been the absolute floor of my existence since, you know, since I have memories. Again, like I'm not sure when it was that I realized that that wasn't true for everybody, but it is surprising to me every time I'm reminded that it's not true for everyone. You know, it's just like, oh wow, you don't struggle with like feeling like you're not good enough to be in every single room that you walk into in your entire life. Like, fascinating, you know? And I have felt like that. And it has changed shape and size over the years, and I've done what feels like an enormous amount of work on it. And I certainly feel worthy in my music spaces and in certain dynamics. But yeah, I walk around with a base level of fear and certainly some sort of unsureness about my self-worth a lot of the time. And I have drawn to me people who know that and use it for bad. So I have to be very selective about who I allow in and who I'm drawn toward as well. You know, like I want to make sure that I'm dealing with people, certainly in my collaborations, that are not destructive.
Yeah, that self-loathing thing is it was, I don't know, maybe it was about a year ago. I said something and a colleague said, "You're really hard on yourself." And I said, "Well, is there any other way?"
Very, like fascinating, right? Like, and sometimes I do observe people that very clearly don't have it, and I mean, I'll say aloud to people close to me in my life, like, that is so, I just want to spend like an hour asking them questions about like what it's like, you know, to put work into the world, to have friendships that aren't based in some sort of exchange of that. I'm you know, I don't know it. I see it on TV. That's about it.
Yeah. So there is, though, I think a big part of anything, right, is being aware of it. So at some point you become aware of like these things are not things that everybody deals with. And that in itself is kind of a gift that you start to recognize it. That happened pretty late for me. I don't know about you.
I think it happened pretty early for me. Not the awareness that other people didn't have it, but I became pretty aware that I had it young, that I was a person for whom this was difficult. Yeah, for sure. And I have a sibling who I can't tell his story, but he has it in different ways too. And so that was really helpful, I think, for us to have one another to be able to sort of bounce experiences and perceptions back and forth between. I feel grateful to have a peer in that way, you know. But yeah, feel free to tell me about your experience of discovering that. It's helpful for me.
Yeah, no, it's just one of those things that again, the songs kind of resonated with me in that way because it's like, oh, you write about for instance this idea of the putting yourself down and saying that you hate yourself and things like that.
Socially, yeah.
Yeah. And there is even I think sometimes a kind of a social benefit to that, like it's sort of
Yes.
expected.
Yes. And celebrated. I think that that type of self-deprecating, it can sort of come. I am a funny person, which is also kind of a slippery thing for me. because that can sometimes be like a coping mechanism or like a something that I hide behind. And I learned that very young as well. But yeah, I think it can be celebrated. And as a woman, I mean, women are absolutely socialized to put ourselves down. I mean, other women have socialized us to do so. That's expected. Yeah, and you know, in the case of the song that you're referencing is called Yellow. In the case of that, I wrote that about the second full band session for this record. And so I was doing those things in front of people who absolutely know me to the bone. I mean, my band members have spent a lot of time around me, and I make this very intimate work, and I bring them into the experience of rendering it. And you know, Lex Price, who plays bass on my solo stuff, is probably my closest friend. So we really know each other. So for me to be lapsing into that type of thing in front of them is fascinating, because it's not, they're not like exterior people, you know, they're in the fold. And so it speaks to like me just being, I was like overstimulated and just freaked out because I was producing and there was just a lot happening, a lot of moving parts. And so the default behavior was to speak down about myself. And I caught it. I caught it in the same calendar day, which is huge progress, because I think that I probably went like a full decade before noticing that I was doing it, you know, when I was like 22 or something like that. I think it used to just be my norm, for sure.
It was I don't know if you saw if you ever saw any of the episodes of Inside Amy Schumer.
I didn't. I
Okay.
didn't. Of course, I know who Amy is, but no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, so there's a sketch in one of the episodes, and it's this group of women who like meet on the street, and one says to the other one, "Gosh, I really like your outfit." And she says, "Oh, this? Oh, I just pulled this out of a dumpster this morning." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "You're so pretty." And she's like, "Me? Oh no, I look like something in a cow pasture." And it's this whole thing about how we do that, you know,
Yes.
and it's just acceptable.
Right. And to take that further, if she had said, "Oh, I know, don't I look great today?" That other woman may have likely walked away from that interaction and been like, "Yikes." Like, because, you know, to go the other direction is absurd, right? Like, you can't do that, or you're just like from outer space. So it's like it's better to fall on the self-loathing side of the fence than the other. And I think I'm just striving to be in the middle. Anywhere in the middle would be acceptable, you know. And again, like, you know, with every awareness and every t I think writing music about it really commemorates it for me and makes me like pay attention to this, because you did this in front of Lex and Chris, and that's weird, you know. So writing Yellow was sort of me putting a flag in the planet and being like, this happened here. We don't have to do it at the next session, you know. Not from a place of shame, but just from a, it's like a reminder to myself that I did that, even with people I love and trust.
And sometimes it is really hard to just accept, for instance, a compliment because we want, oh well, you know, oh, that wasn't my best work, and you know, how can you say that? Blah, blah, blah. And it's a big deal if you just say thank you,
Yeah,
right?
thanks. Right. And there are people walking around, Jed, who do that. They're among us. I don't know what their story is, but feel free to chime in, folks, if this describes you. We'd love to know more.
It's just like, yeah, just let it, people don't need the annotations and the everything else. If they're complimenting you, you just say thank you and you move on, and maybe that lessens some of that internal, you know, friction too. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's easier for me too. Like, Friendship Commanders is a project that I share with another person. And so sometimes it's easier for me to just be like, I'm one of two. I don't have to metabolize all of this on my own, the good, the bad, the difficult, whatever. Whereas Buick Audra is just me, even though I, you know, I have these people playing on my work. I'm the writer and producer completely, and I'm the person putting it into the world. So accepting compliments or just any discussion is very difficult for me on my solo stuff. Absolutely.
You also write about oh, and I see your cat.
Yeah, sorry. I
No, no,
live
no,
among creatures.
no, no. I love cats. I love cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you also write about this idea of home, and if you and I know from previous conversations that you moved a lot
Yeah.
and so on and so forth. And home is such is one of those things that we, I think a lot of people at least, take for granted, right? And that this relationship, that home is going to be this place for of comfort. And but if that's discolored by anything, it becomes so much more complicated.
For sure. You know, and there are all these maxims about like, home is where you are or where your people are or whatever. But I think that it's much more individual, as most things are, than any of those types of statements or ideas can communicate. I am originally from Miami, Florida, but yes, as you mentioned, I was moved around quite a lot. I mean, I've mapped it out at one point or another, but I went to different schools almost every year of my upbringing, and sometimes multiple schools in one year. And I moved between Boston and Miami, which are very far apart geographically and culturally. And I was shuffled around between different parental figures, which is also enormously confusing, one of whom isn't actually my parent. So, you know, I was kicked out by my mother when I was 13 in Boston, and she sent me back to Miami to live with my brother's father. And I thought I would be there for a week, and I was there for 2.5 years, which is a foundational experience, you know? So there's a song on this record called It All Belonged to Me, which is about my relationship with my hometown, which I love and which I'm glad to be from, but who is like a distant memory at this point, because I don't go back there, perhaps not for the rest of my life, but I haven't been back in a decade. And that wasn't one of those things where I was like, I'm never coming back to this place, but it just was so painful to be back there and to be constantly re-engaging with dynamics and systems that make it hard for me to stay alive. I mean, not to be too heavy, but there are certain familial things that I think can make it hard to stay alive. And at a certain point, staying alive becomes a primary project, you know, and in a number of ways. I don't just mean physically, but like being okay becomes a primary project. And I stopped going back to Miami, and it is such an intriguing place and such a singular place. And when people talk to me about it, you know, I always speak praisingly of it. But the truth is that it's a very far away memory and location. And so I kind of wanted to mark that. And there is a song later on the record called Firstborn, where I talk about like just having acceptance around being here at this point, you know, and just being like, well, like this is imperfect as well, but it's not that kind of imperfect. It's a safer imperfect. And here I am in Nashville and making this work and living this life. And it's much lower impact than those other stories, for sure.
Yeah. You also kind of, I think, grapple a little bit with this idea of, if this is where I came from, meaning these are my parents and this is the family history and everything, how much of that is in me? And then what do I do about it, right? Because just this morning, he wasn't a parent, but I had a very close friend whose father turned out to be just a terrible person. And I was around him so much that there are elements of his personality that, you know, I absorbed. And I was brushing my teeth or something, and I was like, oh, that's such a Mike thing.
Yes.
You know, to think, ooh, how do I get that away from me, you know?
I think when I was younger, one of my parents is, so I have three parents, one of whom chose not to have me in their life when I was like 15, and who didn't contribute to raising me up to that point. So he's kind of like this, it's very vague and abstract, but he is there. And to my knowledge, he's still alive. And then I have these other two parents that are not together. And one of them is very volatile and dangerous to me. And when I was younger, I mean, Jed, I used to scan myself for signs of that person. You know, I would just be like, do I possess whatever this is? I mean, it just was terrifying to think that I could be hurtful. I mean, and everybody's hurtful in micro ways, and we're all, you know, we injure each other as we move through the world. I'm not saying we don't, but I mean, like on purpose. Like, am I a person who hurts other people on purpose? And I'm not, you know, I'm not that. But I do see parts of myself. Part of the faltering is that I'm from that. And this, it is Less about am I hurtful today, and more about like the fact that I did spend my 20s scanning myself for damage and for the tendencies that these people demonstrated or exhibited. So yeah, I mean, it's very tricky. And you know, at some point in my recovery from all of this, I did make a list, and this was helpful. I did make a list of things that I like about myself, which if you're an adult child, making a list of, if you can name 10 things that you like about yourself, that's really, you're on the right, you're doing a big thing, you know? So with the help of an outside person, I made a list of 10 things that I don't hate about myself, and was able to draw a line from each of those things to one of my parental figures, and to kind of, you know, help me place some positives. And that was nice. You know, it doesn't undo the rest, but it was a helpful thing for me to be like, you are also good, and they also, you know, my music comes from my two biological parents for sure. They're both songwriters, and I think we talked about that the first time we got on the call. And I think they're both enormously talented and intelligent and intriguing. And I'm grateful to be biologically related to them in that way. So I have looked at the whole picture, but yeah, I don't spend a lot of time with them anymore because it feels radioactive. It feels like it gets into my system in a way that takes me a long time to recover from.
There's, I think, too, that kind of societal expectation that, oh, family is everything, and da 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 da. You know, we hear all these platitudes about that. And when you don't have that, or that's not your reality, it's like, ooh, hang on.
Right. And I think for people, I'll just speak for myself. I think for a lot of my life, I thought, oh, well, I'll just play along. You know, that's sort of what this culture invites us to do, right? That the largest number of people for whom something is true become the dominant voice. Like Mother's Day, we all love our mothers. Mothers are wonderful. You know, these sort of blanket statements. And it's like, you know, who wants to be the person that's like, you know, it's been rough over here. I haven't found that to be true. I can't make that statement across the board. And you know, not to be hateful, but it's just, I think I really tried to play along for a long time. And it's only been in the last 5 years or so that I've started to be like, you know what? I'm gonna speak to something else. I'm gonna take up some space for those of us who, you know, largely raised ourselves or were raised by like sort of a motley village of rock shows and other outside people who contributed to us getting from 1 year to the next. And we don't have to call them mothers. We don't have to call them parent figures. We don't have to call them anything. We can just name it for what it is and be like, I was sort of raised by wolves, but I'm still here. And I'm tired of playing along. And you know, even naming the album Adult Child has been such a fascinating study. The first time I said the name out loud to somebody who didn't work on it. So like Kurt Ballou, who mixed the record, you know, he's obviously known the name for a year, everybody who played on it. But the first time I said it to somebody who was just like a person in the world, he looked at me and laughed and he said, oh, who among us isn't? And I think he thought I was saying that I'm a childish adult, you know, that I'm, again, it's that like, oh, she's putting herself down and we like that, you know? And it's actually kind of the opposite. The way that I'm using it is that it's, first of all, the way that I'm using it is shorthand for a longer phrase, some of whom will know what that is and some of whom will not. But I felt 40 at age 7. So it's not about being a childish adult, it's about that I was never young. I never had the opportunity to be young. You know, and what do you do with that as you keep going? So it's been interesting to even not play along with the album title and just be like, yeah, I'm just going to call the record Adult Child because it's one of my identities.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, I had a conversation last week with somebody and I said, look, I'm 52, but I feel like I'm 21 because I'm taking care of myself in the way that a 21-year-old does with a little bit of ego,
Great. Good for you.
good dose of selfishness, you know?
I love it. I love to hear it. I'm so proud for you.
Thank you. You know, but that was like a huge revelation because I was like, oh my God, you know, I was, you know, 40 at 14.
Yeah, it's real. I mean, there's a song on Adult Child about this called One Step Close Up, where I talk about having the audacity to document my own life through my work and not just be a person who's living in service of my family and my brother. And I mean, I did that for a long time. I thought it was what I had to do to earn my place in the world. I had to just be, you know, out here rooting for and documenting everyone around me. And the very idea that I could make a record with my name on it and not make it about all the men and not make it about how lucky I am to do it and not make it about, you know, and just to stand here with these expressions of self and these photos that I took of myself with that camera and be like, this is my work. And in 40 years, when I'm gone, I hope it's around. I hope that this is what I leave behind and not just a legacy of like serving other people. That's good too. But I want to have been a person that actually, like, God forbid, like served myself and showed up as who I am in this lifetime. And you will lose people for that. There are people who, when they knew you as a person of exclusively of service, they're not interested in the new version of you. I mean, you know, I don't mean that in some sort of TikTok snippet way, but I mean that people will leave. People will be like, no, I didn't sign up for this particular version of you.
Yeah. There was something in that song too that really resonated, which was, I kind of took it as, you know, there was a day, I don't know, maybe a year ago, where I said something a little self-deprecating and or would have been perceived, I guess, that way by other people. And I was just being honest. And a friend of mine said, yeah, that's you. But with no, like, you got to stop doing that. You got to. Yeah. And I was just like, you know, thank you.
Yeah. And that's a safe person, right? A person that's not there to punish you or to, like, sort of swing too wide the other way, you know, just can be like, yeah, I see you. I know you. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I have like five of those in my life. They all worked on this record.
That's a great number to have. You
it
know?
Is. Yeah. And my brother, who didn't work on the record, but who the album is dedicated to, because he's sort of the other one who knows, you know.
I also wanted to ask you about this line that, since the first time I heard it, has... back when love was the word for every fucking thing, every fucking feeling.
Back then, the word was love for every fucking feeling in this world. Yeah, that's from Questions for the Gods of Human Behavior, which is the first song I wrote for this record, and how I knew I was writing a record about being an adult child. That was the moment that I was like, oh, here we go. Here comes this. Here comes this topic. So that record is one of my favorite. Or that line is one of my favorite songs on the record, rather. And for me, I don't know how it hit you. For me, it means that there was a time in my life where all of my relationships were built on this sort of like insane, bizarre to think about now, but bizarre, like immediacy, like, you know, dynamics would take root like just instantly. Like you'd meet somebody and you would instantly have like too much closeness and too much sharing and too much vulnerability, and you know, it all fell apart. It was all built on, you know, not much. I think I have one relationship from the chapter that I'm talking about, and we've had to really work on getting on better footing. But you know, just this sort of, because I have felt so rejected and have been rejected, I was rejected by all three of my parental figures in one way or another, you know, just like that I have to let everybody in, and I have to, anyone who's interested in knowing me, I have to embrace that and make it work forever. You know, that's going to be the mark that I'm not this abusive, you know, damaging on person parent, or I'm not this absent parent, or I'm not this, you know, that I'm going to make all of this work. Meanwhile, you know, first of all, it's not my job to make every dynamic in my entire life work. Like there are other people on the other sides of those, also revelatory, right? That I'm not 100% of all my relationships. I'm not on the hook for 100% of what happens. You know, I'm powerless over the other 50%, and learning to show up as only 50% of the relationship is also like almost post-it worthy on like every surface in my life. Like, you're only half of this relationship. Keep it together. But that, there's relationships were not all based in love. They were based in like weird, I don't really identify as a codependent. I know a lot of people do, but they were just based on these weird sort of ideas of lack and like, we have to be together and we have to function as this and we can never change. I had so many weird lopsided friendships that were very childish. And now I don't. But I still get invited to that kind of dynamic fairly often, actually. Where I'll go out to celebrate someone and some person I've never met before will be have had too much to drink and they'll want to speak too closely to me and ask me 350 questions about myself and drill me. And I have to stay with myself and be like, you don't have to answer any of this. You can just be like, yeah, it's great to meet you, and be pleasant and then move on because it's not actually a dynamic that I'm interested in. And I know today that I'm actually allowed to not take every offer, that I don't have to take every relationship that's offered to me, which is, I think that's the point of the whole thing.
Oh God, yeah, that's huge, right? I've learned that if I hear somebody say, "Oh man, I feel like we've known each other forever," that's when I get what I call Scooby legs. It's like, no.
I gotta get going. I know. I met a woman at something. I was at an event and it was a seated, ticketed event. And so, there you are. You're in your seat, and the person sitting next to me was very friendly and talkative and whatever. It turned out we were both musicians and we were exchanging stuff throughout the night, in between performances that were happening on stage. And toward the end of it, she said, we're best friends now. And I tell you what, I felt like, I mean, I could hear the soundtrack for The Shining, just like creeping up over me. I was like, just say some, just smile and get yourself to safety. It's just like, I really have to, I have to take a pass on those. And I'm not saying these people are mean and cruel or even imbalanced. It's just, I have my fears around that kind of thing now. Let's take it like glacially slow. Let's learn about each other for 5 years before we even identify as friends. Let's be colleagues for 3 to 5 years and then we'll work on friendship. I mean, Kurt Ballou has been working on my work for coming up on 6 years. I think he's mixed something like 38 songs that I've written. And I think I have felt safe and correct in calling him a friend in the last year and a half. I'm serious. We were friendly. We were great collaborators. But for me to be able to focus on the primary purpose of a relationship and not have to turn it into friendship or we care so much about each other or all this other sort of flowery stuff, it's like the primary dynamic is that we're collaborators. We have become friends over the many years of doing that. And that's like emotional growth for me to be able to just like do that and find the friendship part where it is natural and comfortable for me.
Yeah. Well, I think there are cultural forces at work with some of that stuff too, where it's like, fast friends, even the idea of social media is you're going to make friends and oh, it was love at first sight and all those things. And it's like, those are
Terrifying.
so damaging.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is fed to us everywhere. The entire rom-com industry is based on, these types of ideas. And I don't even just mean about romantic dynamics. I mean, most of my work, when I talk about relationships, I'm talking about either familial or friendship relationships. I very rarely talk about romantic relationships. I mean, I did when I was much, much younger, but it's not of great interest to me, actually. Like, it's just not a topic that, I don't know. Doesn't hold me.
We've talked a lot about the themes on this record, and it's possible, as with everything, that some people are going to hear the record, love it, love the music, and a lot of what we've talked about and a lot of what's there will just go beyond them. Is that okay with you as a writer?
Yes. Yeah. I have come to accept that we all are hit by different things in music. And again, this is fascinating to me, just like the people who are fine with themselves. I don't know what's going on, but There are people who hear music and it's purely energy. They never listen to lyrics. They're only listening to how the sort of vibe of the track makes them feel, or they're listening to like sort of more detailed, like technical performance stuff, or there are even weirdos who are just listening for mixes. I don't know what's going on, but that's fine. Everybody's entitled to show up to the work with whatever they're bringing. It is a very thoughtful record that I put together. I wrote 18 songs for Adult Child, and there are eight actual songs on the record and one spoken piece. So it was a very thoughtfully curated, assembled, and produced body of work for me. And I wrote it in bursts, as I talked about, but it was actually made over kind of a prolonged period of time. The first two tracks on the record, which are The Worst People Win and Questions for the Gods of Human Behavior, were tracked in March of 2023, right before my other band, Friendship Commanders, started releasing work from our album Mass. And then I didn't track the rest of the record until one full year later because Mass was such an ordeal in a good way, but it was a very life and time consuming thing to put forth. So I didn't get the band back in the studio until a year later with the other six songs and that they played on that I didn't record myself later on. So yeah, it was it's very thoughtful for me and very careful, and I wanted to make sure that I was doing this work of I try to be a person who talks about what it's like to be from what I'm from, whatever language you want to put around that, but not tell their stories, which is very tricky, right? So to tell your own story, and your own story does intersect with other people's stories, especially when you're talking about childhood stuff and how it impacts you today. But I don't think it's my job, or even I don't really feel permission to tell their part of it. So to try and speak about it through this lens of like, this is how it feels for just me. I can only speak about my slice of it and not be like, oh, she was this and he and they, I can reference they, but like in Yellow, I say, I pay the debts for the people they could have been. That's like the extent of it that I'm willing to put forth because I have to live with it and I want to be a responsible storyteller. And responsible storytelling means that I'm just telling my part. So it was very carefully crafted. And some people know that. I mean, the first two songs have been out for a little bit, and Yellow in particular got a lot of tears. I got a lot of DMs. People had never heard somebody say that they hated themselves and were catching themselves say it, and it was like very, very familiar to them. And that's powerful. It doesn't really matter what happened that led me to be a person that says that I hate myself out loud. It just matters that I do it. And that I'm aware of it and that I know what it points back to.
The other part of this is that this is going to live on.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe 10 years from now, there's going to be somebody who discovers this record for the first time or something.
Yes.
And they might be in a situation like this where they get to ask you questions about it and you will have
Yeah.
moved on.
Yes,
Do
I
you
know.
just take that as part of like, okay, well, that's part of making art. Like, I don't have to go back and relive everything about it, but that will be part of the story.
Oh, for sure. So, I mean, I can speak to that very quickly. Last year when Steve Albini died, Albini was a friend and a collaborator, and we, my band Friendship Commanders, made a record with him, and we released his mixes of that record, which we had not released initially when we put it out in 2018 or whatever. But we made that record in 2017. So we're that is 8 years ago as I sit here right now. So it's not quite 10, but it's eight. And when we looked back at that record, when we re-released it, I mean, I wrote that whole record. I was like, wow, I was really going through these specific things when I wrote this record. And what I was going through is losing all those friendships because I had started to have self-regard. So it's interesting. It's like it's all connected. And I'm always just writing around like the season of awareness or experience that I'm in right now. So I could remember it emotionally and intellectually when I looked back. The record's called Bill. When I looked back at it, but I certainly am not in those spaces right now. I'm in this space and the space of the forthcoming Friendship Commanders record, which I think is kind of the sister record to Adult Child. So yeah, it's fine. It's cool. I think that it's such a privilege and a calling to document not even necessarily your life, because maybe you can look at it that way. I think it's about documenting a perspective and how that perspective is changing throughout your life, because the life is itself a bunch of nuts and bolts. But the perspective that I have carried through my life has changed dramatically. And it's a gift to be able to look back very honestly at what it once was, because the songs are truer than any photograph. I will smile in a photograph and I will not smile in a song. So the songs are reflecting back to me exactly what I thought and felt. And that's powerful.
You've been listening to a conversation with Buick Audra. Her new album, Adult Child, is out June 13th and can be purchased via her official Bandcamp page. You can also visit BuickAudra.com to learn more about her. You can also hear a 2024 episode of Into Music, in which we discuss her musical origins and her other creative avenues, including her work with the band Friendship Commanders. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast at kmuw.org. And you can also send us questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.